In the green rolling hills of the French-speaking half of Switzerland, in a region called Gruyère, and yes, that's where the cheese comes from, sits the village of Mol. It's a tiny place, with a one-room schoolhouse, a single restaurant, and a couple of bed and breakfasts. Most people who go there go to hike in the forest of Mol, a peaceful preserve with bogs and evergreens on the slopes of the nearby Mount Giblou. In the winter, Mol residents skate on the ponds and cross-country ski in the forest. In the summer, they gather mushrooms. On a hot summer Sunday in 2012, an anonymous Mol resident went out with her family to go have a picnic in the woods. As they were setting out their blanket in a clearing, the underbrush quivered, and something came storming out. Something big, human-shaped, a good 6'3", or 1.9 meters. It wore a hazmat suit over its powerful body. Her kids screamed and ran away. As the entity approached, our witness locked eyes with it. Covering its head was a gas mask. This wasn't the only encounter like it. Just a month before, a family driving through the forest of Mol reported a person crossing the road in front of them who wore a boiler suit, again their face obscured by a gas mask, no physical features identifiable. This time, the masked terror was clutching in its left hand a bundle of flowers that it seemed to have just picked. An old woman a few months later reported coming across a similar figure. This time it was stooped down, picking flowers. And when it saw her through the lenses of its gas mask, it seemed spooked and ran, with a long military camouflage cloak fluttering behind it like a superhero's cape. This was the local cryptid of the Forest of Mol. They called him the Ghost of Mol, or by the name he would become known under in the global press, Le Loyon. Sightings allegedly dated back to the late 1990s, although I can't find any media coverage of Le Loyon, even locally, until the early 2010s. Some sources specifically cite the first sighting being in 2003, but if that's true, it remained a truly local story, spread by word of mouth for several years. Most people in Mol had never seen Le Loyon. Some, including the mayor at the time, didn't think Le Loyon was real, that it was just a fun story the villagers tell. And then, one day in August 2013, a man named Patrick, a pseudonym he used to talk to the media, was out walking around by the peat bogs in the forest of Mol, and out of the woods stepped a figure, tall, with army surplus boots and a long camouflage cloak. Patrick had heard the stories, but didn't believe them, until the figure came closer and stopped at a distance of about 30 feet from Patrick, staring at him through a gas mask. They stood there for a second, sizing each other up. Patrick was terrified. Then, the figure turned and calmly walked away, along the forest's gravel road. By now, the age of smartphones had begun, and cryptids today are no longer safe. Patrick snapped a photo. Blurry, heavily zoomed in, doesn't confirm that this figure is wearing a gas mask, but this man is not your average Swiss hiker. The photo was published on August 27th in Le Matin, one of the main newspapers in the nearest major city, Lausanne. It looked like Le Loyon was real after all. I'm your host, Tor Parsons. These are my co-hosts, Jollibee the Durian, Sluds the Shoggoth, and, not really a co-host, just a fun accessory, my Mjolnir Hammer. And this is both Tor's and Thor's Cabinet of Curiosities. In journalism, they say August is a dead zone for news. Powerful people are on vacation instead of making headlines. Schools aren't open, the government isn't in session, and the papers pad their pages with pablum. Silly season, they call it. that time of year when you might as well devote a full-page article to a blurry photo some guy took of a purported local legend. But it was the first time most people outside Mol had ever heard of Le Loyon, and I doubt anyone involved in the article expected that this would be far from the last time Le Matin would cover Le Loyon. In fact, for a month or so, Le Matin moved primarily towards Loyon-focused content, since that was what sold. The letters kept coming in, the sightings kept stacking up, and the story of Le Loyon would become quite a bit more interesting. People had questions. Lots of questions. Here's my first question. What does that mean? What is a Loyon? I'm fluent-ish in French, but I've never encountered that word. It's not in Larousse, the standard dictionary of the French language. No translation app can crack it. I asked my sometimes co-writer Claire Dissot, who's French, and she didn't know. Nonetheless, it does seem to be a word. Searching Le Loyon in Swiss French language newspaper archives gives me lots of results, dating back at least to the 1950s, when I found this short story about winemakers doing an informal bike race, where the leader of the pack is called Le Loyon. Here, also from the 50s, is what I think is a long joke about unnecessarily complicated scorekeeping in target shooting, a popular sport in Switzerland. A 72-year-old veteran shooter, referred to as Le Loyon, struggles with calculating his points. Another short humor piece, now from 1971, a guy known as Le Loyon, who, quote, always has a good one to tell, flirts with some girls. We see other uses of Le Loyon to refer to a quick-witted storyteller. In 1973, we have an account of a party on March 1st, a local holiday in the Swiss canton of Neuchâtel, that ends with the sentence, "Over the course of the evening, Le Loyon," this time in quotes, "tells stories with perfect finesse, and everyone does a few steps of dancing." No further context. It's in quotes, but it seems you're supposed to know who this guy is. It's probably the same person mentioned in this invitation to a party in 1958, which says, "A Bovard, called Le Loyon, will create an atmosphere of frank gaiety thanks to his funny stories." Multiple other performers seem to have gone by Le Loyon, an accordionist in the 1950s, and a jazz band leader in the 1990s, who led a group called the Loyon Lapids Band. In fact, I think there were three distinct performers in 20th century French-speaking Switzerland who used the stage name Le Loyon. A storyteller and stand-up comedian active from the 1950s through 70s, whose real name was Adrien Bovard, a jazz accordionist, also from the 50s, whose real name might have been Jacques Ferry or Jacques Frey, or the latter might have been the name of an accordionist who accompanied the comedian Le Loyon, or maybe those two Loyons are the same person, and the leader of a locally popular jazz band in the 1990s who also incorporated regional Suisse-Romand redneck humor into his performances and seems to have genuinely been a different person from the two above, but also may have chosen his stage name as a deliberate reference to one or both of the previous Loyons. The comedian Loyon, in particular, is referenced without context in enough news stories from the 50s and 60s that I think he was a household name among Swiss-French boomers. Maybe he did a bit where he put on a gas mask. I don't know. But it means something other than that comedian. As recently as 2008, we here have a column of Vaudois jokes, jokes that you're only supposed to get if you're from the canton of Vaud, in which a farmer called Le Cayennais is trying to get a stubborn calf to drink, and his neighbor, Le Loyon, delivers the punchline, "Enroll him in the marching band! He'll drink all alone!" Yeah? I don't get it. The most tantalizingly useless find is this column from the 90s in which a journalist just lists all his favorite nicknames he's come across people using in the paper, and one of the nicknames is Le Loyon. Also, every single one of these examples is from Switzerland. Finally, Claire and I found an answer. She asked the publisher of her cookbooks, who grew up near the French-Swiss border, and she knew. Loyon, the publisher said, is an old local nickname for a man named Louis. It comes from Arpitan, a distinctive French-like language or bundle of French dialects once spoken in the Alps, including the whole modern-day French-speaking part of Switzerland. Swiss French still has a handful of vestiges from the now mostly forgotten Arpitan language, notably the old-school nicknames for common French names, of which Loyon for Louis is one. The Le is an old tradition that's still a thing in parts of France, Switzerland, and Italy, unrelated to the Arpitan language, where you refer to people colloquially as the first name. Says Claire, "I've been La Chiara, the Claire, in Italy. My first husband was Il Max, and you would certainly be Il Tor. Before I came across the multiple performers who went by Le Loyon, I considered from the few sources I'd found that Le Loyon seems to mean something like big cheese or top dog, but apparently Claire's publisher's family didn't know of any additional meaning. It does clearly seem to have had connotations of a garrulous backwoods storyteller in the mid-20th century, though. I have to wonder if Le Loyon started as a nickname not for the gas mask guy, but for someone who claimed to have seen him. Picture an old Swiss man drinking beer with his friends, and one of them says, "Hey, did you ever find out more about the guy in a gas mask you said you saw?" And another pipes up, "Yeah, what other stories do you have for us, Loyon?" And everyone laughs. That seems perfectly in line with the uses of Loyon I've found, especially since when I can track down the real name of someone who went by Loyon, sometimes their real name has Louis in it, but often, like in the case of those performers, it doesn't. And Loyon seems to itself mean a teller of tall tales. And then maybe the media misinterpreted Le Loyon as being the name of the gas mask figure, because by now the nickname Loyon is so obscure that the reference even had to be explained to some Swiss people. In one of the news sources about the gas mask wearing Le Loyon, I found this paragraph, which I wish I'd come across before Claire had asked her publisher. Here, an elderly local man named Louis says, "It's me! I'm Le Loyon! Haha, not really, I just go by that because it's a weird old nickname for Louis." There was my explanation all along, which shows that it's not common knowledge, even to the Swiss. An editorial linking Le Loyon to other half-true stories of people living in the wilderness, like the Japanese soldiers on islands in the Philippines who didn't know World War II had ended, says the gas mask man was dubbed an inoffensive Loyon, a nickname that had been, quote, "inflicted by a hack writer for lack of inspiration." I think Le Loyon only became a nickname for this guy after the photo went viral. No source I can find from before the photo refers to this entity as Le Loyon. In fact, the first article to publish the photo didn't say Loyon once. The typical nickname the locals used, and the nickname that Le Loyon himself used, because yes, you'll be hearing directly from him soon, is the Ghost of Mole. What did we know about Le Loyon's habits? Could we track him down based on where he got that outfit? Probably not. A commenter on Reddit says his outfit in the photo looks like a Swiss military surplus poncho, which nearly everyone in Switzerland would have access to. Switzerland is one of the countries with compulsory military service, albeit just for men. Some eyewitnesses reported the gas mask as looking antique, possibly from the World War II era, but those aren't hard to find online, even today. The Gas Mask and Respirator Wiki, which is a thing, of course, say your daily prayer to all the autists of the world, suggests it could have been a sea mask, which is available on eBay for a price that's not nothing, but certainly not a museum piece. Like, we couldn't narrow down the guy's identity by finding a list of the 10 private collectors in Switzerland that have a sea mask or something. Most sightings of Le Loyon were reported on Sunday. Villagers in Mall describe being afraid of going into the woods specifically on Sunday. A few English language sources say Le Loyon was out there almost every day, but I doubt that. If he had such a consistent schedule, how was it so hard to get a picture of him? Maybe everyone was so scared of him that they all gave him a wide berth, but I don't think so. Even most people in Mall thought Le Loyon was just a legend before the photo surfaced. So that gets me to the question, how active was Le Loyon? How often did he go out walking in his gas mask such that people were aware of him, but not aware of him enough to 100% say he wasn't a myth? Right now, I'm temporarily living in East Tennessee, in my fiance's childhood hometown, the most rural redneck place I've ever lived, tone tag positive. Yes, I moved from Oregon to New York City pretty recently, but now I'm in Tennessee, and I'm as surprised as you are. And my initial idea for this episode was to go to a thrift store, find something I could fashion into an outrageous getup, maybe not a gas mask, but something spiritually adjacent, and then wander around the woods here in Tennessee a few times a week and see if I can get some rumors going. Then, months down the line, I'd start working on this episode as soon as I see a blurry photo of me or references to some new local cryptid on like a county Facebook page. I told the plan to my fiance and she was like, "Guns. Shit. Yeah. Guns." Switzerland has guns too, though, right? Don't the Second Amendment people always talk about Switzerland as an example of a chill, peaceful country where everyone has guns? Well, sort of. Switzerland does have the highest rate of gun ownership in Europe, the continent's freest gun laws, and a strong tradition of target shooting, sometimes considered the national sport. The gun ownership rate is a fraction of America's, and concealed carry permits are rare and hard to get. Hunting rifles, though, are pretty easy to get and legal to carry in a lot of places. It's not out of the question that a hunter could have accidentally shot Le Loyon, or even intentionally. I think whoever Le Loyon was, he worried about that, and he was probably right to. Once the photo was out, French-speaking Switzerland was consumed by Loyon mania. After Le Matin published the photo and a few testimonies from villagers in Meaux, including the mayor, who said that the legend resurfaces every few years but he never expected photographic proof, they were inundated with letters from residents who knew about the gas-masked man in the woods and were scared shitless of him. A few days after the release of the photo, we got the first use of Le Loyon to refer to the guy, in an article headlined, Le Loyon doesn't make anyone laugh. It was terrifying, and I know women who no longer go hiking alone in the woods, said a local about her encounter with Le Loyon. Several mentioned that they thought their kids were in danger from Le Loyon. Politicians quoted in the article reassured everyone that there had never been any reports of Le Loyon doing anything, short of picking flowers or gathering mushrooms, both of which appear in multiple witness testimonies. But the villagers weren't having it. They seemed to be on the verge of going after Le Loyon with torches and pitchforks. Speculation went to absurd extremes. Mall residents told the press Le Loyon was a woman, despite the imposing size, who was rich and mentally ill. Others said it was someone with a skin disease. Speculation went to absurd non-extremes as well. What if he just wears that to keep himself safe from ticks? A lone skeptic suggested. Asking for more letters, the article ended, should we leave Le Loyon alone? The answer from everyone interviewed there seemed to be, hell no, he has to stop. But then, 5 days later, Le Matin printed another Loyon article, after a deluge of letters from the rest of Switzerland. Fake Loyons are proliferating, read the headline, above a photo of a guy who claimed he'd gone out and had a beer with Le Loyon. This was a hoax, and the participants admitted it, but they ran a full page of letters from Loyon defenders, with one local inviting Le Loyon to share a good fondue. They interviewed a family picnicking in the forest of Meaux, who said, maybe he's weird, but if he was a problem, we'd know. But the speculation didn't stop. Many people on both sides of the Loyon debate believed that Le Loyon actually lived in the woods full-time, and didn't just walk around there, which there was no evidence for. Some started to treat him as an actual ghost. A Facebook page dedicated to Swiss fans of cryptozoology, you could call them crypto bros, rebranded to be 100% Loyon-focused. The satirical weekly Vigus deliberately tried to create a mythology around Le Loyon, casting him as an immortal, gas-related villain recurring across history, from the trenches of World War I to the Syrian Civil War. He was cited tear-gassing protesters during the May 1968 riots in Paris, dispensing Agent Orange in Vietnam, and threatening the first responders at Chernobyl. The article then goes further off the deep end, suggesting that Le Loyon appears in prehistoric cave paintings, and that parents in Papua New Guinea tell their kids that if they don't finish their food, Le Loyon will eat them. The idea behind this article may have been to make fun of the media circus surrounding Le Loyon, which had kinda gotten out of control. A month after releasing the photo, Le Matin ran another cover story about Le Loyon, their fourth in as many weeks, that was basically like, damn, that blew up! The whole world's talking about Le Loyon. What? Now letters were pouring in from across the world. One suggested Mystery Incorporated should be brought in, and they had the right idea. Le Loyon is the most Scooby-Doo villain ever horked up by real life. He wears a spooky costume and doesn't do anything actually harmful except mildly scare people. He would have gotten away with it too, if it weren't for the meddling press. Just 2 more months later, the same blurry photo appeared on the cover of Le Matin again, with this arresting headline, Le Loyon, il s'est fait harakiri. At a chapel in the woods, where Le Loyon had regularly been sighted, a hiker came across a military poncho and a gas mask, draped across the forest floor. No one around. And then, a message. Headlined, The Last Will and Testament of the Ghost of Meaux. The letter was addressed to Patrick, the pseudonymous taker of the photo, and sizzled with anger. Dear Pseudo-Patrick from Le Matin, not only are you a cretin, Larousse a stupid or absent-minded person, but you are ultimately an assassin. You are an assassin of freedom. Listening to you, you'd think it's the Middle Ages, the days of witch hunts. I terrorize children? Don't make me laugh. Why aren't they terrorized by the horrors and crimes, these ones real, that they see on TV and in the media? Switzerland is small, and all that doesn't belong next to the garden gnome must be eradicated. I'd thought over these years, given that everyone left me alone until you, that those sentiments were evolving, while you have unfortunately given me proof of the opposite. The ghost will disappear, for the risk of a hunt for the beast is too great. At the end, the letter instructed its finder to deliver it to the mayor or vice mayor of Salle, the regional municipality Moll is part of, or to a, quote, journalist who can still expound on tolerance and freedom. Le Loyon's last testament ended up being printed in the Salle local newspaper, with a heartfelt message from the mayor, hoping that Le Loyon would find a new way to unwind in the woods. And that was it. Many in the media, especially abroad, reported that Le Loyon had literally ended his life, but if that had happened, the authorities must have covered it up, because no news on Le Loyon has surfaced since then. More likely, what the author of the letter meant was that the character Le Loyon, the gas-masked man in the forest, was to be retired, and the man behind the mask would live on, with his time as a legend remaining secret. A local named Olivier claims to have seen Le Loyon without his gas mask a few months after the letter, ice skating, doing figure eights on a frozen pond. He remained too far from the figure to see his face, but said it was Le Loyon because of the man's height and his long cloak. As far as I could tell, this is the last reported sighting of Le Loyon, and I don't know what was so distinctive about this skater that made Olivier think of him. Olivier hadn't seen Le Loyon before. This final sighting sticks in my head, precisely because of how unremarkable it is. I hope this was Le Loyon, just like I hope the sighting of him picking flowers was real, just a guy having fun in the woods. But the fact that by the time this was all over, people in Mall could see a man in a long coat at a distance and say it was Le Loyon should cast doubt on at least some of the sightings. Was there a Loyon at all, or was this mass hysteria? Sure, there was a photo, but the person who took the photo is anonymous to this day. Everything the figure is wearing in that photo is standard Swiss military issue that would have been easy to come by, and Le Loyon was already a local legend long before the photo surfaced. What are the odds that someone concocted a media circus to draw attention to their little Swiss town? The letter, too, was purportedly just found in the woods, near the site of previous Loyon sightings, by an anonymous source. His cloak and gas mask were right there alongside it, according to the media, but there's no photo of that, and I couldn't find any account of what happened to them. If that's true, someone out there has Le Loyon's gas mask. Who? Wikipedia, for one, still refers to Le Loyon as an it, and classifies his whole story as an urban legend, which, to be fair, is probably the right journalistic choice. I managed to find contact information for one person repeatedly interviewed about Le Loyon during Loyon Mania in 2013. He was a member of the local government, and in the second article in Le Matin, the one where everyone in Mall was talking about how scared they were, this guy was interviewed, urging calm and saying he's launching an investigation into the identity of Le Loyon. I couldn't find anything about the conclusions of the investigation, so I found the guy's phone number. He's not in office anymore. On a Sunday afternoon, Swiss time, I cold called him and he picked up. He was friendly, cheerful, seemed amused that a journalist from all the way in the US had tracked him down, so what did I want to talk to him about? And I said, Le Loyon, and immediately his demeanor changed. He was like, I don't know anything about Le Loyon, and I don't want to talk to you anymore. Goodbye. And he hung up. What the fuck? I searched for contact information for other people mentioned in the articles. Didn't find any. Looked for arrest records for the Canton of Fribourg, but those are almost impossible for the public to access. Swiss privacy laws are famously strict. Many emails to regional governments and newspapers in French-speaking Switzerland, and even just to small businesses in the Mall area, asking to talk to someone, anyone who knows about Le Loyon, went unanswered. If you're American, and you're into urban legends and mass hysteria stories, the prospect of a gas-masked man terrorizing a small rural town may have reminded you of another gassy, cryptid-adjacent figure, the Mad Gasser of Mattoon, Illinois. In 1944, as World War II raged overseas, hundreds of residents of this sleepy Midwest town reported smelling a sickly sweet chemical odor. Several claimed that the gas paralyzed them, sometimes for hours. And this was no ordinary gas leak. Among those who smelled the gas, many of them saw an attacker, outfitted with a tank of something or other on his back, releasing it across town. One woman even gave a detailed description of being ambushed by a man with a spray gun. While no contemporary reports from Mattoon specifically described the Mad Gasser wearing a gas mask, as a figure in Midwest folklore, the Mad Gasser has usually been depicted that way ever since. Police took the investigation seriously, but couldn't find a culprit. A lot of people suspected it was some industrial gas leak instead, but toxicology tests showed that there wasn't any detectable noxious gas around where Mad Gasser sightings had been reported. One person was found to have been sickened by fumes from a spilled bottle of nail polish. The official story ever since has been that there never was any gasser, and this was just a manifestation of wartime fears of invasion and chemical weapons. It's easy to generate a mass hysteria event like this in a population that's already on edge, especially when the thing everyone is hysterical about is something as insubstantial and ubiquitous as a faint bad smell. Come to think of it, do you smell gas right now? Do you? You don't, right? Or do you? Is there a distant chemical smell in the air? Is it maybe giving you a mild headache? Pause the video now and check your stove. It's not on, is it? So where's that coming from? Drink some water, take some Tylenol or whatever. It'll probably go away, right? Then again, the Mad Gasser saga doesn't have a lot of features in common with Le Loyon. Stories of Le Loyon are consistent. There's nothing reported in Mattoon, Illinois in 1944 that's as distinctive, as difficult to mistake for anything else, as Le Loyon's gas mask. I think there's a different entry in rural American folklore that compares better to Le Loyon. One that doesn't involve a distant war, one that really wasn't a case of mass hysteria, and in this one, a local legend turned out to be pretty much right on the money. If you're from the Pittsburgh metro area, you may have grown up hearing about a local boogeyman called the Green Man, or sometimes Charlie No Face. Maybe at the school you went to, these were treated as two different characters, or maybe they were one and the same. The story varied over the decades and from one neighborhood to another, but it involved someone who was horribly disfigured, maybe in a chemical accident, like the Joker. Almost all his facial features had been melted off, hence Charlie No Face, and maybe there was radioactivity involved, making his skin glow green ever since, hence Green Man. All over western Pennsylvania, there were roads or tunnels in the woods where, the kids said, the Green Man lived. Park your car, honk three times, or blink your lights, or something. The stories varied, either way. You were summoning the Green Man. And on Route 351, outside the town of Coppell, a few nights a week, from the 1940s through the 70s, the Green Man would appear. His real name was Raymond Robinson, and he really did have almost no facial features. When he was 8 years old, in 1919, he'd climbed a pole on a bridge used by an interurban, a rural regional trolley line, to look at a big bird's nest up there. The pole held up the trolley's live wires, and young Raymond was electrocuted. The newspapers reported he would die, but he didn't. Completely missing his eyes, nose, and left arm, Raymond soldiered on, taken care of by his family. As an adult, he made leather handicrafts for a living and lived a basically nocturnal schedule, going out for long walks at night, for fear of freaking out the populace. He was blind, so darkness didn't mean anything to him. Local teenagers were the first to find out about Raymond Robinson. He was scared of them at first and thought they would prank him or bully him, something that did happen a few times. But that wasn't the norm. Raymond Robinson went from a creepy urban legend to something that, having been injured at such a young age, he'd already resigned to never being. A beloved pillar of the community. High schoolers would come offer him cigarettes and beer, which he had no trouble with. It was the 50s and he had bigger health problems. He posed for photos. He talked about baseball, which he had an almost encyclopedic knowledge of because of his many years listening to games on the radio. Raymond didn't trust anyone right off the bat and would hide when he heard people, but if he heard a voice he recognized, he'd come out of the woods and introduce himself. Generations of kids in western Pennsylvania learned about the virtue of tolerance from nighttime conversations with Raymond Robinson. Le Loyon may not have been as social as Raymond Robinson, but it's possible that he just never gave the locals a chance. A longtime theory about Le Lion was that he suffered from some disability or disfigurement, and that was why he dressed like that, which could well be true. But either way, Occam's Razor says Le Lion was real, and was just some guy. The local politician I called, who had launched an investigation into the identity of Le Lion, Maul is a small enough town that everyone knows everyone and rumors spread fast. Most likely, I think, he really did find out the identity of Le Lion and decided that, since he wasn't hurting anyone, the right thing to do was to keep the secret safe. Sometimes there are strange things in the woods. That's a place where reality and fairy tales agree. But the things you'll find there usually aren't evil. This investigation wouldn't have been possible without subscriptions to Swiss newspaper archives and vital statistics that I'd originally gotten to research a previous episode set in French-speaking Switzerland, the story of Martial Richaud, the bus man. Not only did these stories take place only 20 miles away from each other, they seemed to be, on the surface at least, about very similar people. Martial Richaud would walk through the city of Lausanne on a rigid schedule every day, wearing a Lausanne bus driver's uniform and pushing a golf caddy that he said was his bus. Richaud became a local icon. Some people said they were scared of him or they didn't want their kids around him, but the overwhelming consensus was that he was harmless and should be protected at all costs. If Martial's special interest was not in trolleybuses but post buses, Switzerland's rural lifeline buses that connect remote mountain towns, and so he'd pushed his cart through the woods instead of the city of Lausanne, maybe he too would have become something of a cryptid. Despite being very smart and happy to matter-of-factly discuss his passion for buses, Martial Richaud was put in a mental institution, which caused an uproar across French-speaking Switzerland. After the dust settled, it came out that Richaud had been institutionalized to protect him from the people of Lausanne, that sadly, it was a danger to be openly weird like that in Switzerland. In interviews, Richaud too grumbled about the rigidity of Swiss culture. "We like when things are well categorized," he said. Maybe that's a trade-off. A place with a tightly organized, clean, perpetually on-time transit system that reaches every nook and cranny of a country with very daunting terrain is also a place that's tightly organized in a social sense, a place where it's very hard to be weird. Call it the paradox of the Swiss autist. I feel like Japan is another country that would apply to. Maybe Finland, too. I grew up in Eugene, Oregon, a city stereotyped as being weedy in multiple ways. Maybe not the most governable place, but full of fun weirdos. I was aware of several people at least as eccentric as Martial Richaud or Le Lion when I was a kid. A bearded hobo who went by Frog and sold what he called the world's funniest joke books. The jokes were like the type of joke you'd see on your uncle's Facebook over a picture of minions laughing, but Frog himself was a fixture of Eugene life. There was this guy, I don't think I ever had a conversation with him, but I saw his bike all the time. Another quirked up bike boy from my childhood in Eugene was whoever rode a penny farthing bike decked out in bright multicolored LEDs past my house at exactly 8 p.m. every night. According to my dad, he's still at it. If Le Lion had wanted to move to someplace like Eugene, he'd have become a charming curiosity. The gas mask guy. A local brewery would name a beer after him. When he died, appreciations would come pouring out from across the city, just like they did in Eugene when Frog died of COVID in 2024. Years from then, someone would post a selfie with him on Reddit, and the top comment would be like, "Damn, is that gas mask guy? Been forever since I've thought of him. I met him when I went to UO. He was so nice once you got to know him." But Le Lion probably had friends and family in Switzerland, whether or not they were aware of his escapades, and his right to hike in a gas mask was not important enough to him to blow up his life over it. Instead, he agreed to hang up the mask. Maybe behind the scenes, he was pressured to do this. I think evidence I've found points to a situation where the townsfolk of Maul and the local government know more than they're letting on, but not much more. After the photo was released and it went more viral than anyone expected, becoming a bigger news story than anything that had ever happened in that sleepy stretch of Switzerland, I think the small-time politician I cold called tracked him down. I think he confessed to being Le Lion, and I think he was rightfully pissed off that people saw him as dangerous. The local council and maybe the police persuaded him that he wasn't safe, that there are hunters with rifles in these woods, and some of them see you as a criminal or supernatural threat. "Put out a letter," they said, reassuring the public. "You can say what you want in the letter. you can tell the world how annoyed you are, but for the sake of our community, you have to retire. And grudgingly, he did. I don't think Le Loyon was disfigured like Raymond Robinson. I don't think he had a medical or sensory issue either that required him to wear the outfit. Everything about the letter, as it seethed with anger at the Swiss culture of conformity, suggests that his gas mask hikes were a pure and innocent hobby of his. Remember where the letter was found? At a chapel in the woods. Someone had been leaving flowers at this unattended little Catholic shrine, which other hikers just walked on by. Le Loyon was almost always sighted on Sundays, and on multiple occasions, he had a bouquet of flowers. Some news sources, especially in the English-speaking world, reported that Le Loyon had confessed to being a masochist, that he had admitted in the letter he did it as a kink. This entered Loyon lore, and to this day, some creepy stories blogs and TikTok accounts describe Le Loyon's getup as resembling a gimp suit, something I can find no eyewitness claiming. He did reference Leopold von Sacher-Masoch, the namesake of masochism, in the letter, but in a context where he clearly just means that people are into some weird shit, and that's their right. You have assassinated a truly inoffensive being, went the letter, who found in his hikes a veritable happiness therapy, a mental rejuvenation, permitting him to confront his responsibilities and the vicissitudes of his normal life. The ghost doesn't owe you an explanation of this happiness, but you don't seem familiar with Sacher-Masoch. You discover that it takes every kind of person to make a world. At the end, where he said he would stop doing his hikes, he said he would return, quote, to haunt all the narrow-minded spirits like you, because at long last, a ghost never dies.
Color of your heart, but the matter.